Okay, I am presenting, it's called Health Plans to Employment. It's a play on the individualized plan of employment that VR agencies spend a lot of time working on their clients with. It's an online health promotion program for vocational rehabilitation clients, hence the name. And I want to acknowledge I'm co-presenting with Casey Ruggiero. I mispronounced that last name. I've known her for a couple years, but it's always hard for me. Anyway, we have no disclosures to report. So health and employment. You might be asking yourself, why do a health promotion program for VR clients? Well, there's a lot of research that supports the relationship between health behavior and employment outcomes. And we know from the worksite-based health promotion literature that people that participate in wellness programs and such have reduced rates of employee absenteeism, reduced rates of medical care utilization, et cetera. So there's a role for having health promotion as a way to facilitate employment. Unfortunately, as we know, people with disabilities are underrepresented in the people who have access to worksite-based health promotion, employee-sponsored programs to full-time workers through their insurance programs. That's where the majority of health promotion access comes to people. And so we need to find places that people with disabilities access where they can gain that health promotion kinds of intervention. We've done research to kind of substantiate the role of health promotion and employment outcome for people with disabilities. We started with a behavioral risk factor surveillance system study where we were able to look at a sample of people with disabilities, and we found that the probability of employment increased for people with fewer days of reported limitation on the health-rated quality of life module and engaged in exercise more often. And this was controlling for severity of disability. We also have looked at the VR, or vocational rehabilitation sample, to look at the probability of employment based on presenting secondary health conditions at baseline. So what was the downstream employment outcome 18 months later based on the number and severity of secondary conditions? And what we found is that employment went up for people reporting fewer days of limitation, and it was a lagged effect, so we could predict that based on that, and it really presented a case for including health promotion as one possible service that VR could include in their array of things that they do in terms of their planning. So, should have been here a long time ago. So, what we did was the Working Well with a Disability program was our first foyer into the VR population, and we, I don't know, some of you might be familiar with a program called Living Well with a Disability. It was a 8-week workshop-based health promotion program, peer-led by facilitators from Centers for Independent Living. It's been hugely successful in helping people manage secondary conditions. We adapted that for the Working Well with a Disability program. We recruited participants from VR who participated in the program, and what we found was Working Well was associated with reductions in secondary conditions. I want to do a caveat here. It's really an interesting outcome. There were no employment outcomes as we followed people along 1 year. I want to emphasize that there were no employment outcomes. All these people were attending VR services, and there were no outcomes. So there were no outcomes from VR services, Working Well, et cetera. So I think that probably the timeline was too short to show those meaningful changes, but I just want to highlight that don't blame it all on Working Well. Okay, there's some additional findings from the Working Well that really are pertinent to the health plans to employment. People who are trying to go back to work or are working on their individualized employment plans have time constraints related to employment, related to training, on the job sorts of things. Also, we are a rural center. We focus on rural issues, and transportation is a problem. It's a problem to get to workshops once a week. People are trying to manage that kind of, David spoke about it pretty eloquently. You know, when you have a 2.5 pray for a ride thing to get to a working well workshop session, for instance, that can be a pretty significant barrier. On the VR end, VR is under enormous financial constraint. And asking them to support a workshop format is a pretty big leap. I'd like to see them devote those kinds of resources to it, but you know, health is not their primary concern. And so I wanted to look at some modifications to potentially reach a wider audience and address some of the issues that were present in the working well, which led to the development of Health Plans to Employment. So what is it? It's an online self-directed health promotion program. And so people begin by logging on and doing an initial Check Your Health assessment. It asks about 9 secondary conditions that are prevalent in the VR population, in the Center for Independent Population based on Living Well research. And we focused in on conditions that really have an established link in the literature with behavioral lifestyle interventions. So you start with this Check Your Health, 9 questions. And based on those 9 questions, people are led through an online process. And I'm going to try to explain this. It's a little hard, a static presentation with a non-static application. But people first get their survey results. And I'm going to, there's 2 screenshots here, one for survey results and one a condition page. And essentially people go through this process. I'm going to just do an overview and then we'll get into more specifics. So they take survey results. Based on those, they can select certain conditions that they're interested in focusing on. So I might only be mildly limited by anxiety, but that might be the thing that I want to start working on. So it's very self-directed. We're not telling you what you should work on. It's just where you want to go with it. From each condition page, and a condition page, oh, you're right, this does fade out after a few minutes, From each condition phase, it talks about that specific condition, be it anxiety or fatigue or physical fitness problems or sleep problems, and it provides you with a brief overview of how that might be affecting your work or other life activities, and then it provides you with a series of solution summaries, of which there are 4 that we cover: physical activity, nutrition, stress, and sleep and relaxation. And so based on that condition, then they can select which solution summary they want to learn more about. And people can go back and forth through here, so you're not pigeonholed into what your first decision is. You can go, I want to learn more about that, and then go back. So they go to one of the 4 solution summary pages, and this screenshot is of the stress page, and it provides a number of things to the user. There's kind of, what are the benefits of doing that? What are some strategies for managing stress? What are the existing resources that are out there? So for each solution page, we link to NICPAD, National Center on Physical Activity and Facility, the USDA's MyPlate. So helping people identify and link out to existing resources in the field while keeping in mind that there's some maybe disability-specific lessons that they can learn here and then apply out there. Then they go on to a series of 3 goal-setting pages. There's this is a screenshot of the goal setting and action planning, the first page. Then there's a creating plan of action and a my action plan. And they begin by looking at their current patterns and motivation for change. And these are interactive. So depending on which solution you're working on, the goal setting and action page will give you an example for that particular intervention. Thank you. And then it kind of models what we hope people will think about writing for themselves. Then they go to creating a goal, and then the next thing that they work on is creating a plan of action. So they set up the barriers that they see relating to that goal and do problem solving to move through this, and they end with a printable action plan that they can then take away and work on the goal. We also have a monitoring progress tab. The program sets up where it will re-alert people on a weekly basis, an email alert to log back on, record how they're doing, make modifications to their plan, etc. So I'm going to pass it over to Casey, who's going to tell you kind of the methods. And
all right, so I've been charged with being quick, which is not my strong suit. So I'm just going to tell you quickly kind of what we did in my role in the project. So we sent out recruitment letters to active VR consumers and that had a primary physical disability. So we mailed to 1,200 participants in Washington, in the states of Washington and North Carolina. We got postcard returns from a variety of people. We had 222 of those postcard returns that were both willing to participate in the study and had access to a computer with internet. So these folks, minus the six who withdrew from the study, well, they were the six were randomly assigned, but the rest of the 22 were randomly assigned to one of three groups. So the health promotion fact sheets group was initially kind of our way of getting at a control group. This group was sent via email for psychoeducational health promotion fact sheets that targeted stress management, sleep problems, dietary our nutrition and physical activity. Then there was the HPE website group. There were 91 in that group. And then there was an HPE website plus motivational interviewing. This group is smaller, you'll notice. We didn't have the capacity to do this kind of individual tailored intervention for the entire population, so we stopped randomizing after 40 participants for the MI group. And this group received two 35-minute telephone-based motivational interviewing phone calls. How do I move here? Perfect. So HPE with motivational interviewing, I just want to give you a brief overview of this. Motivational interviewing is an empirically supported stage-matched intervention. It's an interviewing style that focuses, it's a client-centered interviewing style that's also directive in nature. So it really focuses on five different things. One, collaboration with clients, really bringing them in and having this a participatory kind of way of collaborating on what might be helpful to them. Second is evocation, or evoking from them their meaningful reasons for change. So really getting at, you shouldn't exercise because we say so, but what would be meaningful to you about creating an exercise plan, for example? Autonomy, so really supporting that they're the active agent for change. So this is really up to them what they decide to do and how they decide to do it. Direction, so part of MI, even though it's client-centered, is this idea that we're systematically reinforcing pros for change. We're getting at this idea that, yes, you, when they say, I've had all these problems, but I've tried this, this, and this, we're reflecting back to them in an empathic way that there's really all these barriers to creating change, and yet you keep trying, right? So we're bringing it back to the pro for change. And then the last thing being empathically being with consumers and trying to understand their experience from their perspective. So we did this in a telephone, we delivered this telephone-based, primarily because there's emerging evidence that telephone-based motivational interviewing works, but also because we focus on rural issues, and so we're targeting access to care, and telephone-based is one way to be able to access folks that may not be able to access health behavior or health professionals in other ways. So MI really gives us a way to interactively tailor the intervention to individuals' specific barriers and goals. Motivational interviewing has a broad base of empirical support across health behavior changes. It has an emerging support in telephone-based. To my knowledge, there's two studies that provided telephone-based motivational interviewing to folks with chronic illness. Both had positive outcomes. And as you can tell, Catherine made these slides. It's a good dissertation topic as well. So this motivational interviewing component is my dissertation. So we felt important to let you know that. Do I not have a... Oh, here it is. Okay. So the last thing I'm going to talk about is... So this is really a preliminary analysis where we did data collection at 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months. And 6 month data collection is actually still coming in. So this is really preliminary. And we focused on just a couple of outcome measures for this preliminary analysis. We use a secondary condition surveillance instrument. It looks at prevalence and severity of 32 health-related conditions. And we got a global score by adding a cross item. So it's rated in severity from 0, never or rarely limits, to 3, which severely limits, which I think equals 11 hours roughly a week in limitation. So there, it provides a global score of limitation. We also use the CDC's health-related quality of life items. We use 7 items from this measure, looking at the dimensions of physical health, mental health, pain, anxiety, depressed mood, and sleep. So we averaged the average number of days in the last 30 to kind of come up with a global scale of limitation as well. And then finally, we use the Health Promoting Lifestyles Inventory, which is a 52-item measure that looks at 6 different dimensions of lifestyle behavior. And again, we created a global score here by averaging across the 52 items on a scale of 1, rarely, to 4, being routinely engage in these behaviors. So we got a global score for that. And I'm going to turn it back over, and Catherine can tell you what we found.
Thank you, Casey. Okay, well, what we found is that at least over the first 4 months, all 3 of our intervention groups did well. So our control did well, and our HPE did well, and our HPE plus motivational interviewing group did well. They weren't huge changes. They were all significant. So there were significant reductions in the sum of secondary conditions. I kind of switched the slides around, or the idea and the picture are inversed. And sorry about that. Last minute thing. Reduction in average health-rated quality of life days of limitation was significant, and there was a significant increase in average health-promoting lifestyle behaviors. And this one is actually the one that I'm kind of most pleased about, because in a lot of research that we've done, this has been the hardest measure to actually see change on, so I was really impressed. Once again, no main effects, only main effects, no significant group effects. So what do I do with that? Because the fact sheets was supposed to be my control group. Well, we did have control group data from the Working Well project, which is the program that I highlighted that preceded this. And so we decided to, while the data didn't match up exactly, for instance, the Working Well control group was collected at 3, 6, 9, and 12 months as opposed to the baseline 2, 4, 6 month thing, it does give you an idea that in the control group for Working Well, there were no changes in, for instance, average days of limitation. And this held true for some of secondary conditions and another health behavior scale that was slightly different. But so we're confident that something good came out of this. So why, first of all, why were there no additive effects, for instance, from the motivational interviewing, which had this additional component? And what we believe is, or what I believe, is that self-selection into this passive recruitment strategy really had people that were ready to work on health promotion. They may have been people that didn't have access to health promotion, but they were ready. They were either in the action or contemplation stages. And we'll be able to kind of tease this out with some of the other measures that we collected. I did not do that for this. I was inputting data up until the moment I cut the cord. Okay, this is as good as it's going to get. So I think that the delivery mechanism really would make a difference if it was a broader audience. The program has significant but small changes. That's not that surprising for an online program as opposed to a very intensive, ongoing workshop kind of format, or something that David described where, people are coming in and getting that hands-on, one-on-one attention. So people with more significant health needs may need more contact, more assistants maybe moving through these health promotion kind of continuum, but it really does have an opportunity to reach a wide number of people with very little cost. I mean, at this point, it could roll out, and if there was someone administering, you know, logins and that sort of thing, it could really have virtually no cost to providing access. And lucky for me, I'm on time. I put my contact information up here. Casey is currently out of town working on her, internship. She'll be back, but I didn't put her contact information up because I don't even know it. But thank you.
Thank you very much. That's great. And again, we'll hold questions for the end of the session.